Hey guys, welcome to the Masters of Modern podcast on the MMCast Network. We are a Magic the Gathering show talking about the modern format and each of the most awesome adjacent formats in Magic. We're brought to you today by the House of Modern, our unbelievable Patreon. That's patreon.com/the MMCast. Please comment, leave your thoughts below, hit that notification bell, and subscribe if you want to keep getting updated on what we're doing here. And of course, follow along on social media with any of the relevant accounts. The information is in the description below. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll see you on the episode.
Welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Michael Grothy.
Hello.
We're on the internet. It's weird. Welcome to quarantine. We also have a special guest today. Everyone give a big hello. He can hear you because that's how this works now. To Jim.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. We're in the middle of quarantine. We're in the middle of spoilers. Because Wizards decided to start spoilers much earlier, like a 9 a.m. East Coast time, it feels like today, I woke up to chaos and just like was not brain-wise ready to handle everything that was going on when I woke up this morning at 9 a.m. And so then just had to like, as quickly as possible, grok why everyone was really mad about otters and what companion was and how many lightning bolts I could now put in my deck that used an otter as a card in the deck. And I have so many questions. Godzilla was there. I thought it was April Fool's related.
No. Today is like April 2nd.
Yeah,
we're past April Fool's.
Like, it almost, I like...
There's an official. There was an official Wizards statement about Space Godzilla.
Yes.
There's an official Wizards article. The title of the article is regarding Space Godzilla.
So I have so many questions. Our readers may have questions, and normally our listeners.
Do you have readers of the podcast?
Do you have somebody transcribing the podcasts?
I wish.
Like,
I wish.
That's really nice of you. I'm sure that the deaf. Listeners, or I guess readers that you have, are really appreciative of your, forwardness.
I mean, I am good friends with Lucas, who does all of the transcribings of Drive to Work. I guess I could ask him to do this, but I don't think that we do that currently. Today we're talking about Ikoria. It is Ikoria or Ikoria. Do we know? Has there been a pronunciation?
Ikoria.
Okay, it's Ikoria. And there are so many things on this plane with weird names, and there are so many weird monsters, and I'm going to pronounce none of them correctly. But before we get started, I do want to give a big shout-out and thank you to the House of Modern. This is kind of a Patreon tier where we thank you every episode, and you get kind of private chat access and all the cool stuff. Please check out our Patreon. We've kind of restructured it, so there's all these new stuff. Everyone in there, big thank you. Andrew Kelso, thank you so much for being a member of the House of Modern, noble of House Modern. Thank you, as always. You can also follow us on Twitter at the MMCast. I'm at Kess Wiley.
I'm at Dudard, D-U-D-A-R-D-D.
My Twitter handle is at Frost, P-H-R-O-S-T underscore.
And you can now follow me as Kess Wiley everywhere. I got my name back on Twitch, twitch.tv/KessWiley. So excited. I just dabbed on camera.
Streaming some wild Sultai brew the other night as Kess Wiley.
Yep, I streamed Sultai. I streamed some Final Fantasy IX. I've done so many Kess Wiley things. I been at war with the Twitch approval board for at least 6 months, and I'm back, baby. Finger guns. Pew-pew. All right, so today we're talking about Ikoria, and we can go over many things. The first thing I do want to go over, because I think it's going to be the most defining feature of every set, is the mechanics. And it looks like we have... four mechanics that were added to this set. One of them is a returning mechanic. It's probably my favorite. It's of all the returning mechanics that we come to a lot, it's the one that I honestly just think should become evergreen at this point, and that's cycling. For those who don't know, this is a thing you could do. Every card that has cycling, you may pay a mana cost, and sometimes you don't have to pay mana in Street Wraith's case.
Modern podcast, you got to mention Street Wraith.
It's true. You just pay a cost, and then you draw a card, and then often they have if you cycle this card, you get an effect. And then there's other cards that trigger when you cycle cards. Very, very, very popular. One of the better, I can play kind of these medium cards, and this allows me to make sure that my, cards that are either maybe overcosted than normal or a little bit more limited in scope, so they're, destroy target artifact, but I can play it on my main deck. And that way I can just cycle it to draw a card and move on with my life if it's not relevant.
That's the basics of cycling, but one thing that we see every time there's cards with cycling in a set is that it always affects Living End as a deck in Modern, because Living End is a deck where you're looking to cycle creatures that cost like one to cycle, put them in your graveyard, and then you cast Living End somehow, either by cascading into it or off of As Foretold or Electrodominance or something that lets you play it without paying its mana cost, and you get to get back all the creatures that you cycled. So you're just looking for big creatures that cycle for one. And so like Amonkhet added Archfiend of Ifnir, which does cycle for two but has added upside, and Striped Riverwinder as like a blue option for the As Foretold versions, which is a 5/5 hexproof. So I think being a big monster set, we're going to see some big monsters that have like one or two cost cycling that are going to make it into Living End.
So yeah, so that's the first one. So that's the returning mechanic. Jim, anything on cycling before we move on?
No, cycling is great. It lets you make some more games of Magic. That's always good.
One of the reasons I could see it just being something they bring back or something that's really good right now is because so much Magic is played as best of one on Arena, it does allow for kind of the limited scope of a card that, like, because you don't have access to sideboards, you want to be running a little bit more cards that have the ability to hate out different strategies but aren't always going to be relevant.
If you have like Disenchant that cycled for one, then you would play it in your main deck a lot more, especially in like best of one standard or whatever.
Right. As there's actually a card that does, well, similar to that. It's called Forsake the Worldly, and it cycles for two, but it does basically, it's a Disenchant.
Yeah, for Mama.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a Fog from Amonkhet that I, like, love. I have it in maybe one too many
Haze
decks.
Haze of Pollen.
Haze of Pollen. Big fan of Haze of Pollen.
Yeah, like, Fog is an effect that when it's good, it's great, but it's great so little of the time that, like, you just, it's not worth playing. But if you can cycle it, it gets a lot better. And yeah. Sensor is kind of like that, too, where, like, 2-mana Force Spike is pretty, like, meh. But, you know, if you can cycle it for one when it's useless, it becomes much better.
Yep. The next thing is Companion. And this is the card I woke up to.
Companion is, if you've played Hearthstone, there's a lot more cards that have deck building restrictions that you have to follow in order to get a benefit from a card in your deck. So there are cards in Hearthstone that say, oh, you must only play one of each copy of a card in your deck. And there are cards that say you can only play even cards or you can only play odd cards. They have finally brought those types of cards to Magic. And what a companion card is you can put it in your sideboard and reveal it at the beginning of the game. And as long as your deck follows the deck building restrictions that are printed on the card in the companion ability, you can cast it once per game from your sideboard. But you have to make sure that you follow all the restrictions that are on it. So one of the cards that was previewed today is Karuga the Macro Sage, which is says that your deck can only contain cards that cost three or more and lands. So you can play this in your deck if you have cards that cost one or two in your main deck. But if you want to have it as your companion, you need to have only cards that cost three or more or are lands.
And notably, Karuga the Macro Sage is a dinosaur hippo, which is a bit of a trend in this set of having great creature type combos.
Oh yeah,
for sure. When they were previewing this card, he was standing in front of the picture of it, and I was like, I hope we see this one today. I hope we see it today. And it was literally the next card that they showed, and I was so excited.
Yeah, there haven't been a lot of hippos in Magic, but they're all really cool, and this one I would say lives up to the hype.
Yeah, the hippo card type is just consistently, and it's a legendary creature, so you can now make a hippo tribal commander deck, or, I mean, that's the one thing that's kind of interesting.
You can now do that? They already exist. Have you never heard of the questing Feldegriff?
I have heard of both Feldegriffs.
I don't think the regular one is legendary, or I could be wrong. One of them is not.
Yeah, well, I think the original is.
Legend is legendary. Questing Feldegriff is not legendary.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I have it backwards. Actually, Questing Feldegriff isn't actually even a hippo. It's a Feldegriff. Who knew that was a
hippo? I think they're both Feldegriffs. Pygmy Hippo is a hippo, though, which is a cool one. That's actually the only hippo I can think of. So maybe they're not that cool. Well, the Feldegriff makes hippo tokens. That's why it's easy to mix it up, right? Because there are hippo tokens made by Feldegriff. So you can get a lot of hippos if the Feldegriff player at the table is nice to you.
That's true. It's true.
But so yeah, so hippos are back. This one's giant and beefy.
Dinosaur hippo.
So
Companion is interesting because I kind of get the comparison to Hearthstone, but I think what I think about these companion cards is that it kind of makes non-commander formats into commander. Yeah, because same. You have a deck building restriction, and in Commander, the deck building restriction is one of each card. And because of this deck building restriction, you are able to take a card from outside, a creature, legendary creature, from outside the game and play it. And then now it's in play. It's a card that's part of the game. You cannot put it back in your sideboard if it dies. It just goes to your graveyard. But it's kind of like the closest they can do. And there actually is a card that makes a non-commander game basically into commander if it's your companion. Oh, and also at the beginning of a game when you have a companion, you have to announce your companion and you only get one. So that's to kind of preserve, like, you know, having multiple companions in your sideboard and playing whichever one is good. You have to be like, this is my companion this game, and I get one of them.
But can I have two companions in my sideboard and in game one play with one and then in game two play with the other?
Yes, but each game you have to pick one companion that's your companion.
Got it. And then and then the one you're going to mention, which is when we started this podcast, the one that caused as much drama as you possibly could.
It was a controversial one. Lutri the Spell Chaser is an elemental otter, first otter in Magic. Alex and I did look this up when we were trying to figure out each color's rodent.
Blues is beaver, don't worry.
Yeah. Otters aren't even beaver. We were off.
So beavers,
let me describe this card. We can do beavers later. Otters are not even rodents, so we were off base at the time. But anyway, it has companion. Each non-land card in your starting deck has a different name, which is the commander restriction. Has flash, and when it enters the battlefield, if you cast it, copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. It's 3/2. So this card is controversial because it got banned in Commander because it basically doesn't ask anything from you in Commander, and it's just a free card that only red-blue decks get in their sideboard.
and it's a weird thing, right? Like, the rules of Commander right now do not allow wishes to exist as a functional card.
It's a pretty common house rule, though, I think. But yeah.
So basically, when you play Commander, there are a set of cards called wishes. There's also, more recent years, there's a Vivian, Fae of Wishes, and Karn the Great Creator, very relevant in Modern. All are cards that you can grab cards from your sideboard. Because Commander doesn't have a sideboard, they're not allowed.
If you use that ability, it does nothing.
It doesn't, like, Karn the Great. And so because of that, like, to me, that this feels kind of in a similar space as in how I would have imagined. Now, I understand them, like, this is a big flashy mechanic and wanting to not exclude it from Commander.
It sounds like the Commander Rules Council is going to make it work for the other ones. Like, if you really want to use Karuga as your companion and you have your starting deck contains only cards with CMC 3 or greater in lands, you can just play Karuga as a companion in addition to your commander. You just can't do the otter whose name is Lutri.
Now, if I were to make, because the Commander Council met on last Friday, I believe, and with the Rules Committee, and there's a announcement happening on April 20th. Now, that generally will be a ban announcement. This is also when they make rules things. I can imagine them modifying the wish rule moving forward and creating some version of a limited sideboard availability just to make these also work. But because of the timing of things, they're being tight-lipped about it. Until that moment happens, because that's the one thing is that right now these just in Commander live in a zone that doesn't exist.
Yeah, and it seems like the Rules Council, like, wants to make these work because they are cool and they're the type of thing that Commander players like to do. Lutri does seem like, and I am interested to see how Wizards handles it in Brawl, because I don't think that they are planning on day zero banning it, but I do think that it kind of pushes decks towards, like, pushes more people to want to play decks with blue and red in them, because you basically get a second commander for free. All you have to do is have those colors in your deck. But if I want to build a black-white deck, I don't get a free commander out of the deal. So
I think that calling it a free commander is, like, pretty presumptuous, because this card, in essence, is a dual caster mage, and people don't really play that card very much as it is. It's not a very good card. It's not something that you're, like, really excited to play with.
That's true, but it's not like a free card that's always in your hand that you doesn't take up a slot in your deck.
How much influence is the decision that you get a free 3/2 for 3 in your deck going to really matter that much? Like, are you going to say, "Oh, I'm not going to play the blue black white deck because I want to have this 3/2 in my deck? Like, probably not, right? Like, unless it's really close and you're like waffling between two commanders and one of them is blue red and the other one isn't. I don't know how much that really changes your decision. Like, given how many legendary creatures are in this set and how many different options you have, I don't really think that a lot of people are going to limit themselves to just being able to play with that extra 3/2, unless it's like doing something really good for your deck.
Yeah, I guess it's just, I don't know. It's weird to sit down to a game of Commander and everybody's playing a different deck, but one person just gets like a second random Commander off to the side because they happen to be playing the right colors. I mean, that doesn't feel right to me. Now, if somebody wants to play Karuga and do something actually weird with their deck, more power to them, right? But if it's just like, oh, I built a singleton deck because that's the format we're playing, I also just get a free second Commander.
Well, but like,
even if it's not like incredibly impactful, it's not bad.
I guess, but like, I'm not that drawn. Like a lot, some of these other companion cards have deck building restrictions, but they're not that restrictive to an extent. And obviously,
well, Commander, it depends on which one you're looking at. Karuga isn't that restrictive in exactly Commander, but like there's one that you can only have even cost cards in your deck.
Yeah.
And there's another one that makes it so. What's the other one we've seen? Oh, you can only have cards of a single type in your deck. So you can do like all artifacts or all sorceries or something.
Creatures.
Or
all. Yeah.
But those are like real restrictions. Mm-hmm. I mean, like Lutri is the easiest one. And then Karuga for Commander is generally not a big deal.
I don't think I think you could get away with Garuda pretty like 2 and 4 drops and 6 drops is what you're basically limited to. And 0 drops. Yeah. Fun fact, 0 is an even number. Most of the time. I think also a lot of the like strife around Lutri is just the fact that it's from a cool perspective, like this like very sweet lightning otter.
Well, it's the first otter in Magic, right?
And it's extremely cute. It's legendary and it's going to just immediately be banned in Commander. I think that if this was like, honestly, any of the other ones that they previewed, if they had, well, the hippo is really dope. I think if it was the Demon Kraken, we would be moving on with our lives.
I don't think so either because of another thing that's not specifically that card that is important.
What?
I mean, are we going to get into the next topic? Because it has to do with the next topic.
Oh, I guess. So before we move on, the last thing on this, I guess the final kind of point is I agree that this card isn't that powerful, even if it had 0 rules restrictions. And I don't think it needs to be banned, in my opinion. I'm also not. I don't think it matters that much either way, especially because it's preemptively banned. No one's going to buy this card for their commander and then be sad. And I understand kind of the reason behind the decision. I think that as a mechanic, I think it's weird why this is legal. And for me, it feels like the wish is becoming more of an official thing or just a sideboard or a wish board / companion board becoming more of a thing, especially because Wizards has pretty much, and this cements it to me, committed to because of Best of One and because of that and just because of that restriction and because we also don't love shuffling that much anymore, we're going to move towards using the sideboard as a resource for cards to find stuff from more and more often. And I think for everywhere but Commander, it's a great feature to the format. And then with Commander, the biggest limitation is it just doesn't work right now. And I can see the Rules Committee making a difference there.
Yeah, it's true, especially because like Wizards does work with the Rules Committee on a lot of Commander products, but also like on regular sets, I'm sure that there is stuff that they run by them. Also, like Toby Elliott helps out with rules stuff sometimes, and he's on the committee. So I think that like Wizards can be like, hey, we're looking to use this effect more often. It does seem like, yeah, they're moving towards using the sideboard more.
And before we move on to the next topic, one last thing. The beaver thing. we were going through rodents and which rodent would be the rodent for each color combo. This is when mice was previewed back in Eldraine previews. So I think rats were black, white was mice. Red, people chose gremlins on the internet. We couldn't come up with a really good answer. Green had squirrels.
Okay, I was like, how long are you gonna take for that one?
But blue was hard. And at first we were like, crabs, I think, came up in the polls. Pigeons, because they're flying.
Flying rats.
Otters definitively came out, and they kind of were winning. And then one of us Googled, are otters rodents? And they're weasels. They're not rodents. They're weasels. So doesn't work for the rule and what we were doing. But then beavers are an aquatic rodent that builds things like dams and artifacts.
Yeah, they're artificers, right? They construct, you know, structures in the water.
So we,
that's a hard sell for me, but there's one beaver.
There's not many beavers in Magic. They're all green currently, but I feel like, and they hate forests though. They're also the enemy of the forest. They eat trees.
They don't hate forests.
They eat trees. They destroy them. They're an active anti-forest creature.
Do they eat trees or do they use trees?
They hunt trees for sport. They hunt trees for sport.
I don't like think a beaver would just be like, I see that tree folk there. I'm going to get him.
I do. That tree folk would make a great addition to my dam. my water village.
Why wouldn't you just try to get the trees that don't move?
They do that. It's because they're bored. They're so good at that that they need the sport of hunting down moving tree people.
Right. Oh, okay. On to the next mechanic. The next mechanic is mutate. Is that where we're going with this?
Yes. Mutate is the next mechanic.
Mutate was a little bit previewed by Unsanctioned. There was a card in Unsanctioned that referenced mutate. So it was something that we expected, but we didn't know what it was going to be. So mutate is, there's a cost. It's on creatures. If you cast this spell for its mutate cost, put it over or under target non-human creature you own. They mutate into the creature on top, plus all abilities from under it. So this is kind of like Augment from the last unofficial unset, which was Unstable, where you're basically adding two creatures' text boxes together. You're not completing a sentence. Everybody gets to keep all their sentences intact. But if you say, you know, mutated a creature onto Dark Confidant, let's say this Brockos Apex of Forever that I'm looking at, which has trample and you may cast it from your graveyard using its mutate ability into 6/6. If you put Brockos on top of a Dark Confidant for the mutate cost, it would be a 6/6 trample with at the beginning of your upkeep, reveal the top card of your library and take damage equal to its current mana cost. And then put it in your hand. So Dark Confidant text. So you just add the text together and then whatever creature you decide to put on top, that's the power and toughness.
Okay, so if you mutated him underneath, it would be a 2/1 that does all the drawing, but now has trample.
Correct. So, okay. First thing, if you mutated your Dark Confidant, you get a game's rule violation because Dark Confidant is a human. You can't mutate it.
Oh my gosh, of all the creatures to pick, I picked a human. I just thought of something relevant in Modern.
Charmogoy is a good one. How about that?
Charmogoy.
That's also hard, though, because power toughness changing.
No, you put it underneath.
Okay.
You put the Tarmogoyf on top, and it'll be fine. It's not a good target for a mutate. A good target for a mutate would be like Eidolon of the Great Revel. Okay, there we go.
We're
only picking burn creatures, which is a deck where you would never play this mechanic. But, okay.
Sure, Eidolon.
So the big thing about mutate is that there's a three-color legend in each color that has mutate. And so it's like a big, exciting, splashy mechanic that's on a bunch of mythics. That also have alternate art, because one unusual thing about this set is that in collector boosters or in Japanese boosters, I believe, you can get these full art Godzilla licensed cards that have pictures of Godzilla monsters, and the name of the card has been changed to a Godzilla monster with a small actual name of the card underneath it. Which is super weird, and they've never done anything like this before.
This is what I mentioned, that I was confused and thought today was April Fool's again. This is the reason. I woke up to God, and there was like leaks about this, right? Or like someone guessed it and just released proxy Godzilla cards. So I just thought like, oh, someone found more cards from this guy who's made his own custom Godzilla set. So, and then they're like the real cards.
Yeah. So actually, no, they were leaked. They were in Spanish. They are real cards because we saw them officially previewed today also.
Okay, so they were real. We just all thought they were fake because it's so insane.
It was difficult to tell if they were real or not without the context of what's going on.
Yeah.
Eventually people figured out what was going on and that they're not actually different cards. They're the cards that are in this. They're like official altered arts. Like official altered cards.
But the name of the card says, you know, Godzilla Primeval Champion, and then underneath it tiny it says Titanoth Rex, because that's like the tournament legal name of the card or whatever, but like the name of the card is different.
It is, and I think that's mostly just a nod so that stores don't have to kill themselves trying to figure out what version of Roxos you're looking for.
I guess, but then there's still... So Snapdax, Apex of the Hunt, for example, which is one of these, they also are doing, like, a traditional full, like, alternate art, like the showcase frames from Eldraine or Theros, where you have, like, the constellations or the storybook art. So they have, like, comic book art for them as well. So Snapdax, Apex of the Hunt, has a regular pack card. He also has, like, this super cool comic book art, which actually looks really great.
I love the comic book art. I'm like,
yeah, and then he also has King Caesar, Awoken Titan, and then Tiny Snapdax, Apex of the Hunt. So it's kind of weird, because we do have a regular, like, traditional showcase art, and then we also have King Caesar, Awoken Titan.
So the showcase frames are for the creatures that have Muti.
Right. Okay, got it.
There's overlap.
Yeah, some of the creatures that have Mutate are also creatures that have Godzilla cards, so they have two different alternate arts.
Got it. And then
there are some cards that have Godzilla arts that don't have Mutate, so they don't have another frame version.
I also learned so much about Godzilla
today
through a combination of Twitter people talking about, like, what the heck is going on Twitter, and also in a Discord that I'm in, a friend of mine was, like, educating people about each card. Every time somebody would post a screenshot and be like, hey, look, baby Godzilla, he'd be like, okay, here's the background on baby Godzilla, and he would give us an essay.
I also was trying to understand what was going on, but, like, the Godzilla lore is, like, seven different canons wound together, and none of it makes any sense. So, honestly, the more I was reading, the less I understood about everything that was going on.
Agreed.
Well, like, is Gianelli who did the whole breakdown of, like, each Godzilla character and, like, what magic card they were at the time or something along those lines? Yeah, that's a really good thread on Twitter that, like, maybe is the large, other than, like, when my younger brother was obsessed with Godzilla when he was three.
I mean, those are my two biggest Godzilla educations right now. Like, recent ones that have a lot of these creatures in it, but there's just, like, so many different versions of some of them. Like, there's, like, and I think there's, like, five or six actual Godzillas in the set.
Yeah, because there's baby and, Godzilla,
like,
so
they're
far.
They're not all the same thing. They're not all, like, different parts of the same lifespan of the same monster. They're different monsters that are also called Godzilla for some
reason. There's also time travel involved, where, like, somebody, you know, replaced Godzilla with a different Godzilla or something. And then, like, one of these cards got spoiled, and somebody's like, oh, cool. The Godzilla fan in the Discord that I'm in was like, oh, cool, Mecha Godzilla 3. And I'm like, wait, how many Mecha Godzillas are there?
There's a lot that goes along with now having licensed product and magic cards. I do think that you had to have the name thing on the bottom just from a rules perspective, because, like,
yeah, you do.
Like, without having the actual name of the cards on them, it gets weird with, like, just the legend rule and, like, how people, like people would argue if they didn't have the name in the bottom that, like, the two different versions, Godzilla and the regular creature, could be in play at the same time under your control, and you'd have to,
and
like,
I could build a standard deck where I play four Snapdax Apex of the Hunt and four King Caesar Awoken Titan,
or might do that, yeah,
copies of the same card.
What do you guys think about the mutate mechanic? I mean, it is very, very, and I think, oh, you mentioned that it was previewed in Unsanctioned.
Yes.
Which was the mechanic that was the unbox set.
Yeah, it was on Surgeon General Commander, which I am going to try to remember the text on because I don't want to look it up. It, like, taps for a mana of any color, and then whenever a card you control augments, mutates, or does something else.
I think it's Evolve.
Evolves. I think that's right. You draw a card.
Got it. Cool. So what are your guys' thoughts on the mechanic? Excited about it? I mean, the Godzilla thing is, I have a whole conversation at the end of the episode that I want to have on, like, other properties you want to see. But, or you also had something to say about Mutate alongside our otter friend who's banned and everything.
So Mutate is different than Bestow, but also similar to Bestow. It works in a similar fashion. You're combining different cards together to make a single card. However, there are a lot of disadvantages that you didn't used to have with Bestow that are here. So you don't get the power and toughness from the cards that you mutate onto it. Like, it doesn't combine their power and toughness into a bigger thing like Bestow does. When the creature dies, you don't get, like, some random dorky enchantment creatures hanging out afterwards. Like if your creature that you mutated a bunch onto dies, all of the cards go to the graveyard. If you cast a creature with mutate and you're mutating a different creature and they kill the creature that you're mutating onto in response, it does act like bestow there, where it will just come into play as the normal creature. So you don't get like super blown out in that regard. But a lot of the value of these cards is not necessarily the cards that have mutate on them, but what you can do by mutating onto smaller things. So one of the cards in this set, I think it's called Sprite Dragon, is one of the cards that I think a lot of people are going to mutate onto, because a lot of its casting cost is based in its abilities and not in its power and toughness. So mutating onto big things is not actually very good most of the time, but mutating onto small things that can scale well is actually quite powerful. So Fairy Dragon, or Sprite Dragon, is a 2-mana 1/1 flying haste. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put +1/+1 counter on it. That's a good text box to mutate onto, because it's a bunch of stuff that's like relevant most of the time. But if you mutate onto like a Colossal Dreadmaw, you're paying so much mana for the 6/6 part, then all you're getting is trample. So it's like not a great exchange unless they make a lot of small mutate creatures.
So I agree. One counterpoint to say that like it has disadvantages versus bestow, it also has advantages. Like most of the good mutate cards that most of the rares and ones that will like see constructed play, or could see constructed play, are like when you mutate, do something. So with bestow, you're like basically adding a death trigger to a creature. Like if I play Nimbus Naiad and I bestow it on my creature, I'm adding when this creature dies, you get a 2/2 with flying. But with mutate, when you mutate, you get the benefit up front. So it's more like an enters the battlefield where you're just like immediately getting a card worth of value. And if they then kill your creature, it's gone. But like you're just getting the value up front instead of when the creature dies, which I think is cool. I also think like not adding the power and toughness is fine, but they're costed appropriately, right? Like if there was a bestow creature that was giving +3/+5 and double strike, it would cost a lot more than 5 to mutate. But because you're paying 5, you just get the 3/5 double strike and the ETB. What's also cool about mutate is that you can mutate multiple creatures because it adds the text box. So like if I mutate a Snapdax Apex of the Hunt, which is the one I guess I keep going back to.
Well, that's the one people know that open right now. That's fine.
It's whenever this creature mutates, it deals 4 damage to target creature, planeswalker, and opponent controls, and you gain 4 life. So if I mutate this onto my Bristling Boar or whatever, which is the card next to it in the spoiler, and I get that Lightning Helix right away. And if I then mutate again using a Huntmaster Liger, where whenever this creature mutates, other creatures you control get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of times this creature is mutated, I now get that 4 damage to target creature or planeswalker and gain 4 life again, and I get the Huntmaster Liger trigger. So you can kind of like stack these triggers as well. I don't know how relevant that's going to be outside of like casual formats or draft, but it is an advantage that you have over bestow. Rather than like having these stacking death triggers where you just get a bunch of dorks that fall off, you're like getting relevant ETBs potentially multiple times.
I agree. And that's why I think that like cards like Slippery Boggle are things that you really want to mutate onto, because the more mutations you get on something, the better it gets.
Well, yeah. And if I mutate on top of Slippery Boggle, do now everything I have just have hexproof?
Correct. Yeah.
So you have one creature. It's a mutated creature that has multiple text boxes, but it's only one creature.
Got it. So like it's just whatever those text boxes are all added together. So with Slippery Boggle, it's a great thing to do it to, but you're going to mutate on top of it.
Right, because yes. It has a small power toughness. So if you mutate Brakos Apex of Forever on top of your Slippery Boggle, you will have a 6/6 trample hexproof. And if you then continue mutating, you can keep whatever power and toughness you want from any of those creatures, but you can, you know, go from there.
And with the fourth mechanic from the set, which we'll get into now, it's interesting because both with mutate and this mechanic, it makes me feel like in limited, either removal is going to be at a high priority because it'll give you the ability to deal with these creatures that stuff has been piled onto, or it's going to be at a premium because it's not going to be that common, right? Like there have been sets before where Theros is a great example, another set with bestow, where removal was pretty rare because they realized that they wanted battleship magic to happen. They wanted a big thing to fight a big thing, and they wanted you to pile stuff onto stuff either using heroic or bestow or whatever would are monstrous, and they didn't want you to invest all those resources and just like get blown out by a Doomblade. And so with the next mechanic, which is the keyword counters, which was all previewed in the mystery booster packs, it's a counter. If it's on a creature, that creature gains the name of the counter. So it's if it's there, it's all the evergreen keywords. So it's like flying, menace, death touch, trample, vigilance, haste, I assume will exist. But there's all the different counters. Once they're on a creature, that creature now has that ability, kind of like a plus one counter, modifying power and toughness. This just gives it a keyword. And you're now putting a lot of the cards so far we've seen, some of them are, you cast a card and part of the card's value is that you put this counter on a creature, which means that getting blown up by removal is just a stronger effect than normal.
Yeah, so we do know that Pacifism is in the set, which is like a pretty powerful removal spell for a limited. So I mean, it's common and it's in the set. So that is something that you can put on your opponent's mutate creature. Now, if they're stacking mutate triggers, for example, they can still mutate onto their creature again to get more triggers, but it does like stop a 5-mana 6/6 with trample or whatever from coming down and wrecking you. So maybe the removal is not as is more prevalent, because with Ixalan, it was like a pretty unpopular limited set because it had super powered down removal so that you could play big dinosaurs and not have them die, and also so that you could take advantage of tribal synergy, because if you're like, all vampires get +1+1, but then somebody kills a bunch of your vampires, that card doesn't do anything. So it was like helping you build up enough tribal cards that it was relevant. And the removal was super bad, and it was really unpopular because it was just an aggro format where combat tricks ruled everything. And so I'm hoping that we don't see another Ixalan here. Although I do actually like original Theros draft, even though it's not very popular. So I wouldn't hate if this was more Therosy.
They've learned lessons from Ixalan, right? And maybe Pacifism is a good sign of that. And this is in some ways kind of a set that Theros and Ixalan are great kind of examples of similar sets to this, because you have kind of multicolored tribes almost. Now it's wedges here, and they're like regions based around monsters. You have pretty aggressive large creatures. Dinosaurs are obviously in both sets. It looks like there's some tribal synergies in this set based on kind of just the world breakdown you read. At least there's like cat tribal and dinosaur tribal and stuff. I think we've even seen already.
We haven't seen any of that yet. We don't know that there's any tribal cards. There could be, but it's also like
There is some tribal stuff, but it's like humans and animals together thing. There's like a weird human thing going on. And then there are certain animals that help humans, and then there's the like all of the monster tribal, which is all the mutate stuff, because you can't mutate down to human.
Yeah, so the dichotomy of the like lore of the world is it's humans versus monsters, and there are some crossover where there's like humans who bond with monsters and become like
their companion
party, their companion, yeah. Which is where companion comes from. But it's like humans are trying to defend themselves from these monsters, and these monsters are just big forces of nature that will just crush a human underfoot, you know. And so kind of like Godzilla, right? Basically why they sprung for the license. But so you have like you can only mutate onto non-humans, but I'm sure we'll also see human cards that like all, you know, destroy target non-human when this enters the battlefield or something like that, right? Like I'm sure we'll see the opposite as well.
And that is kind of the last thing I did want to talk about a little bit as far as the mechanics go. Yeah, human tribal's back. Has that ever bitten us in the butt before? Are we worried as a modern podcast?
We haven't seen actual human tribal yet. We'll see.
There's going to be a lot of humans in the set.
Isn't there one of the commanders, a card that cares about?
Yeah, so from the commander sets. From the commander sets, there's like a 5-mana human tribal commander, but that won't affect Modern or Pioneer, which is the formats we typically talk about.
Human tribal
isn't really problematic in any other format.
So the commander sets that they've announced are not like the Brawl sets from September. None of those cards would be legal for Modern. They're not standard legal cards.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. I didn't know if I knew that perfectly.
Now you know.
Nor did I know if our listeners knew that, because we're
on the... legal in Standard, Modern, or Pioneer. It'll be just like a regular Commander set where it's legal in Legacy, Vintage,
and Commander.
Popper.
Got it. Okay. So Oathbreaker, I assume. I don't think that's standard legal.
Whatever. Nobody cares.
Wow. There's a charity out there that cares, and you just threw shade at them. So disappointed. So human tribal's back. Monster tribal, this has a little bit of an Innistrad feel to it as well in that regard. And then I guess the other thing is kind of the color set, right? Like, this is more of a, at least the cards they previewed on day one, which I obviously think is centered a little bit around the Godzilla cards, which will have more of that feel. But it feels like a, there's a little bit of a gold theme, right? There's or wedges and hybrid cards have both been previewed pretty heavily. Do you think this is the extent of the Godzilla cards? Has that been improved, or are there more coming out?
There are 18 total.
Okay.
We know what all of them are.
Got it. Okay.
And not all of them are available in English, and not all of them have been like, we haven't seen the English versions of all of the ones that do exist. The Japanese Wizards of the Coast website posted a article that has all 18 of the cards on it, all 18 Godzilla cards, and includes the three that are only available in Japanese.
Got it. Do you guys like that they're doing licensing in Standard? Do you like that these cards are going to exist? Where do you fall on the world of Godzilla now being a Magic legal in Standard option?
I think it's interesting. It's not for me. Like, the War of the Spark Planeswalkers were also not really for me, and it strikes me as something similar. Like, there are people who are really excited about it, and there are people who are pretty indifferent to it because they don't care about Godzilla. And I feel like it's just fairly similar to the War of the Spark thing for me. So I'm fairly indifferent, but I'm glad that some people are into it.
So I don't really play very much competitive Magic anymore. And by any, I mean, like, occasionally my friend would be like, hey, there's a team constructed tournament, let's go do it. And it's like, you know, a 20-minute drive from my house, and that's the extent of the competitive Magic that I play these days. Alternate art, like, all the really cool, weird stuff, I like a lot, because it gives you a lot of options when you're trying to, like, customize what your deck looks like. And since I pretty much only play Commander these days, I'm more interested in having the coolest and, like, most unique versions of all of the cards that I can have. And this kind of stuff just really is exciting to me. I think this is I'm the kind of person that wants this stuff, even though I'm not, like, the biggest Godzilla fan to have ever existed. Like, I don't know most of these Godzilla cards. Like, I don't know Space Godzilla. I don't know the Gem Godzilla. Like, I don't know. I know Godzilla, and I know Mecha Godzilla, and that's basically the extent of my lore knowledge. But I'm really excited to see these cards because they're very different. Like, they're going to look different in your decks. They're going to be different as your commanders. There's just, like, they give you a lot of customization options that are important to people that don't care about always playing with the best cards. They're playing with the cards that they like. I think that this kind of thing helps to support the price of Standard cards, because the cards that are in these packs are not necessarily cards that I would have purchased otherwise. It helps that a lot of them are legendary creatures, and being a commander player, like, legendary creatures are my thing. But if they were just, like, random, just, like, really well-costed rares and mythics or Standard, like, I don't own a Questing Beast despite it being legendary, because it's not a very interesting legendary creature. Like, it has a bunch of words on it, it's very good at killing people, but, like, 4-mana 4-4s don't really do it in a 4-player commander game. It's just, like, not the kind of thing I want to be doing. So I'm really excited to see that these cards exist. I am a little annoyed that the Japanese exclusive ones don't have an English counterpart, which is a little annoying. Like, I with the War of Spark stuff, like, they said different art, but they were the same card. Unfortunately, three of the Godzilla cards just don't have English Godzilla equivalents. They're just only in Japanese, which is a little annoying. But other than that, I think it's, like, it's very well executed. I think that, like, this is something I definitely want to see in the future, in future sets, like, wherever it makes sense. Like, maybe not necessarily the next set that we go to, but, like, if they went back to Ikoria and they're like, oh, this time we're teaming up with Capcom and they're going to bring you the monsters from Monster Hunter or something like that, like some other franchise that has, like, really well-known characters, you know, bringing those into, like, special alternate art Magic cards is, like, a pretty cool thing to do. And it's something that they have actually done in their other card games. Duel Masters, I think. I don't remember what the Japanese name for that game is. But Duel Masters has, like, an Emrakul and a Nicol Bolas card in it, and it's just, like, the coolest freaking thing ever, because they're just not normally cards that you get in those kinds of games. So, I don't know. I'm really excited for it, and I'm hoping that they do more of it in the future.
They've already done that a little bit with Magic using just Hasbro properties, like Duel Masters crossing over with Magic is similar, I would say, to Magic crossing over with My Little Pony or with Transformers or Nerf or whatever, like, or sort of Dungeons and Dragons, where they do like a couple of promos crossing over with their own property kind of for fun. But this is like something that's in booster packs. It's like cards that people are going to be playing in Standard. And it's also like an outside license that they presumably had to pay money for. So that's kind of what's interesting about it to me.
So a little bit of background. The Toho company is the company that owns the licensing for Godzilla. Mm-hmm. And they already license Hasbro to use that to make the Godzilla toys in America. So I'm not sure that it actually costs them that much extra.
Oh, okay.
But what is interesting to know is...
I can answer that a little bit. The way licensing agreements generally work is that that still costs a percentage of sales of the product that has the cards within it. So even they are paying for the license and for the main toys, and they could have made a different deal for this. This could be kind of an advertising thing for Toho, especially because they're looking to promote the brand more as we lead into the King Kong movie coming next year. But classically, if you were licensing a product, if you were to make a toy that had Godzilla in it, you would have, for every card or every pack you sell, Toho would get a percentage of sales off of that license. Now, it'd be different because how Magic is assorted. Not every pack has a Godzilla thing in it. It's only for the specialty packs. So that's a weird...
That is not correct.
Every pack does have a Godzilla in it?
That is also not correct.
Oh, well, it's not correct.
So every booster box has a box topper pack that has a Godzilla card in it.
Correct. So then,
the booster packs themselves also have a chance to have, the regular draft boosters also have a chance to have Godzilla cards in them.
Got it. So
the collector boosters are guaranteed to have one or more Godzilla cards.
Okay. So then
they could do a percentage of a percentage, right? If it's like you have a 1 in 10 chance of opening a Godzilla, so for every 10 packs sold, you get percentage instead of for every one pack.
And I mean,
speculatively.
But yeah, so that's normally how that deal would be structured, right? So the we don't know what the deal was, and them already having either the master license for toys in the U.S. or a regular license on Godzilla means that this deal could be modified a little bit to work within what people want. But generally, especially if there's a Godzilla card with every box, is correct. I knew that. I just forgot. then... Pretty much every box sale had a percentage of that sale go to Toho as part of that deal. Would normally have that be structured. Could be totally different here because contracts can be whatever you want, and as long as it's legal. And Toho could be giving this to Magic as a PR stunt. They could be making a much lower percentage. It could be just a flat fee. We don't know. And they probably won't tell anyone. What they will do is brag when this is a big marketing success in their quarterly review at some point as Hasbro. it is really interesting how that I would love to know how that deal was done, and we just will never find out.
It's true. So the other thing I wanted to bring up is that despite this being a Godzilla focused supplementary thing for the set, if you're only familiar with the recent Godzilla movies, you'd be really confused because King Kong is in those movies, but it was not going to appear as one of the Godzilla promos.
But he does have a card.
No, that's not King Kong.
Well, but there's a King Kong-influenced character.
Correct, yeah. Correct, because Toho Company does not own King Kong. Universal owns King Kong. So they couldn't use King Kong, even though he's in the movies with Godzilla and in a lot of old movies with Godzilla. So there's a King Kong analogous card to help fill that hole. So if you were hoping that there was going to be a King Kong like special promo version of that, I'm sorry to shatter your dreams, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah, the card is Kogla the Titan Ape, which is 3 green, green, green. When it enters the battlefield, it fights up to 1 target creature. When it attacks, destroy target artifact or enchantment, and you may pay a green and a colorless to return a human you control to its owner's hand so that it gains indestructible until end of turn. It's a 7/6. The card's sweet. Really good. I guess where I'm at on it, I loved the Japanese Planeswalkers. These are a little bit farther away from my fandom. I am adjacently aware of Godzilla due to other family members being big fans or just being a person who is into nerd culture, and Godzilla nerd culture is adjacent to things. We actually, I have, though, as a toy company, met with Toho at least once. if not twice, to talk about licensing Godzilla, which is interesting, which is why I knew also a little bit about what was going on as far as what their deals look like, which is weird. And it was fascinating when this all got announced. The really cool thing is just opening the possibilities, right? Like, not now that we have, and you mentioned it with Monster Hunter and Ikoria, but like, we could go back to Ixalan and have Land Before Time would be a weird one, but Jurassic Park theme stuff. Or we could go to
One Piece.
Yeah, we could do like a pirate themed One Piece set out of Ixalan. Or
I mean, all I'm saying is if Wizards of the Coast wanted to print infinite money, they need to go back to the Pokemon Company and figure out whatever they were talking about, make amends and get alternate art Pokemon cards into booster packs. And just
they make a competing product, unfortunately. That one's less likely.
I mean, are they competing though?
So having sold both, they don't compete a lot, but there's like a range between like 9 and 14 where they do compete. Okay. After 14, they don't compete, and before 9, they don't compete. But there is a range.
So what if they did like a crossover promotion where they brought both properties to the other game?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it would be a tough sell for some of the higher ups at each company, more so than like, could you do it?
I would rather Star Wars, the thing is Hasbro is the master license holder for Disney and Star Wars especially. So that is another property that they have a pretty easy entree into. Not
or Marvel, right?
Or Marvel. I don't know if they don't have the master license for Marvel, but they have the master license for Star Wars. They don't have it for Marvel. They do have Marvel licenses as they have other Disney stuff. The other Disney
There's
properties
also a
are more
lot
like
of out there too.
Right, right. And that would be a little bit more interesting. Like the thing that Godzilla is unique on, and Star Wars right now is kind of unique on, because Destiny just died. At the end of last year, Star Wars Destiny, the card game, is that Godzilla doesn't have a card game out there, right? To my knowledge, Godzilla doesn't have, at least in the U.S., a trading card game or a competitive card battler game. And so this makes sense, right? It won't be confusing. They're not competing with each other. Star Wars no longer has a trading card game out there, and the closest thing they have now is X-Wing, the miniature game, really. I think that's another. Obviously, I'm biased.
Fantasy Flight doesn't have anything in the works, though.
Correct. Obviously, I'm biased. I would want Star Wars things to exist more in Magic. But I do think Hasbro does have a good entree into that, being a master licensor holder and already working with Disney. I think with the Godzilla property is, as an example, as you mentioned, that like properties that Hasbro already has licensed would be ones that I'd be really interested in looking at to see, could they do this in the future? I think Star Wars is hard too, because guns don't exist in Magic, and that is weird. And going to space is also weird. There's a lot of like, how do you do a Magic set?
Did you look at the art for the Space Godzilla or the Mecha Godzilla? It flies. It's shooting lasers and missiles and guns.
He's
like,
right.
It's
he's
so
right.
many of them.
He's right. You could do the alternate arts as it, but like, how do you theme? Like, what would an X-wing be? I guess you could go back to Kaladesh and do Star Wars. That would be dope.
It's a vehicle. It's a vehicle.
All right, I'm on board.
All the ships.
Calendar Star Wars.
Yeah, Heart of Kieran could have had an X-Wing alternate art, right? I'm sure there are people who have had their Heart of Kieran altered to be X-Wing. Yep. Like 100%.
Smuggler's Copter could be Millennium Falcon immediately. I'm here.
Like maybe other way around. Sky Sovereign could have been like a Star Destroyer, like a really big ship.
Yeah. Yep. I'm here. I'm on Ixalan, the Star Wars plane. All right, cool. So,
Kaladesh.
Did I say Ixalan? I'm sorry. I meant Kaladesh. Yeah, Kaladesh is what I meant. Cool. So, I think that's pretty much gone over everything I had on my list that I really wanted to cover. Yeah, we'll do a review next week. So I just haven't had a chance to review every single card they previewed. We'll get the full weekend of everything as well. So next week's episode will be more of a breakdown on what each card, like which cards we've seen so far would look good in Modern. And we'll start kind of our through previews review of the set that we'll be doing for the next 3 weeks. But otherwise, yeah, thanks so much for coming, Jim. Can you tell people where they can find you and what you're up to in the world of Magic?
Sure. My name is Jim Casale. You can find me on Twitter at @PHROST_. I occasionally write MTG Finance articles for Cool Stuff, Inc. And I'm always, available to guest on podcasts. So you might see me here maybe again, or possibly on Brainstorm Brewery once in a while. So I get around.
And yeah, so you can follow the podcast. We're at the MMCast everywhere. I'm at Kess Wiley everywhere now. Yeah, twitch.tv/KessWiley. I'll be streaming there. Me and Tappy Toeclaws are going to do some Final Fantasy IX playthroughs where we'll both do the voices. I guessed it on her stream earlier this week and played a Japanese magic girl dating, not dating game, but queen. It was fun. I don't know how to describe the Toronto choose your own adventure game. But yeah, also you follow Ben. He's at Ben Bateman Media. He wasn't able to make it because we're all in quarantine and doing different things. Michael, where can people find you?
I'm at Dudard on Twitter, Dudardd.
Cool. And make sure to check out all the things in the episode links below. It has a whole description of where everything is at. Also, if you go to Twitter, there's a whole Twitter thread that's pinned of like all the different social media you can follow. Once again, big thank you to our patrons. They're the reason this show keeps happening and helps pay for Marshall to do all the fantastic editing that he does. And just everything involved. There's a bunch of new stuff there. Check it out. We kind of restructured how the tiers work. And everything about that. Thank you so much, Jim, for coming on. It was awesome having you. And thanks, Michael, as always. And we will talk to you guys next week.
This has been a production of Time Traveler Media, sending podcasts into the future.